All right, so we do have we have reached our goal. We have first of all, we have a call from Pam Carsey, who is donating $40 for as a part of the challenge as well, to help with the to help our pledge down here at WEFT. And then we just got a call from Jennifer Putman, who actually is going to donate $100. And so that gets us to the five pledges we were looking for. Sandra, yay! I hope that you are excited about writing that $2,000 check. Was it $2,000? I thought it was. So we really appreciate everybody joining in. We also are going to, I'm on the verge. I have four of the votes of the seven votes I need from the Breakfast Club to also make a donation down here. And I will be lobbying our state representative for a $90.10 donation also down here. Thank you all for all of the pledges, and please keep calling. Please keep calling. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air by listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Views and opinions you're about to hear are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Gus with some of our underwriting announcements.
This hour of program is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Gus. We got some news story. First of all, I want to let listeners know that at half past the hour, 11:30, we're going to be having anti-war activist, author, and radio host of Cindy's Soapbox, Cindy Sheehan, is going to call in to the World Labor Hour. That's at 11:30. And I want to thank co-host Bill Gorell for arranging this. And definitely stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we got some news stories, starting with Gus Wood.
Yeah, we got some big things happening now in terms of some worker groups being agitated right now, both in the state of California and Illinois. Close to 6,500 California and Illinois registered nurses are planning a 1 or 2 day strike on April 30th and May 1st. The action will affect Kaiser Permanente's Los Angeles Medical Center and Providence Health and Services Hospitals in Santa Monica and Torrance in Southern California, as well as 5 Sutter Health facilities in Northern California and the University of Chicago Medical Center in Chicago, Illinois. The strike is organized by National Nurses United, a coalition of 3 major unions, the California Nurses Association, National Nurses Organizing Committee, United American Nurses, and Massachusetts Nurses Association. With a total membership of 185,000 nurses, the NNU is affiliated with the AFL-CIO. So once again, nurses are protesting against understaffing, the decline in patient care quality, and other unsafe practices such as rotation shifts and inadequate safety regulations. In the case of the University of Chicago Medical Center, the hospital's proposal would eliminate charge nurses while tripling mandatory rotating shifts. Grievances also include demands for better healthcare benefits, which we see is a common thread across the entire country at this point, is that healthcare benefits becoming part of the center argument for workers' rights and better working conditions.
Yes, indeed. In fact, the National Nurses Union, along with the steelworkers, were 2 unions that stepped up to the plate right before the healthcare hearings in 2009, where they tried to they wanted to testify at the Senate hearing chaired by Democratic Senator Max Baucus, and they were flatly denied. And that was the same hearings when they later happened that in the last day of the hearings, during the whole course of the week's hearings, only corporate healthcare lobbyists were allowed to testify, and then the last day of the hearing. Margaret Flowers, an activist and MD from Baltimore, Maryland, stood up and asked the Senator Max Baucus, when will people be able to testify and support a single payer? His response was, get more police in here. And there was over 100-some people arrested that day. So, yes, the National Nurses Union has been, they're a great union. They're very democratic, very activist, and they've definitely been in the forefront of issues like single payer health care. So, yes.
And just to go into a historical precedent, what's going on in this story, what we have is profits are rising astronomically for Kaiser Permanente and other groups. But yet these workers cannot get any type of leniency on benefits. The hospitals have completely ignored the nurses' grievances, not just in this year's, but the last few years when the profits started going up. Deborah Bucalato, who was an RN at Sutter Santa Rosa ER, said in comments posted on the website that Sutter is trying to cut corners despite tremendous profits, but nurses deserve basic essentials, which at the very least consider quality health coverage and safe staffing. So here's the issue. Regardless if they didn't make a profit or not, you have to have the human rights basis of health care benefits and make sure that staffing is up to date. But the fact that they're making ridiculous amounts of profits now in this, since the ruling class is making that type of money, mm-hmm. and they're not catering to the idea that workers need better benefits, it's incredibly disgusting. I mean, we gotta have people, they have this on the website, but we have to make sure we spread these types of stories across different media patterns, you know?
And that's a good point. I mean, this greed, this insatiable greed of corporate America in general, but especially the, what I like to call the medical industrial complex, is not only affecting its workers, the nurses who are the front lines workers providing health care, but it's also affecting the safety and well-being of patients that are in the hospitals. And this has always been a demand of the nurses in addition to their wages and benefits, because they have to deal with this. Life and death situations.
And that's one of the dark sides about hospital care work is that it is one of the places where quite a few numbers of deaths occurred.
Yes.
Just from being in the hospital.
Yes.
It's something that happened, not from something you get from outside, but just being in there, deaths occur. And a lot of the nurses will tell you is because of the corporate groups that don't listen to their needs and the things they need to do to fix the working conditions.
Indeed.
So, that's a dark side of the hospital
history, yeah.
Yes,
indeed. Yes, indeed. So, I have a story here, from the Republic of Ireland, and, it's interesting. This is like part of we've been hearing a lot about what's been happening in Greece as far as fight back against, neoliberal capitalist austerity, mm-hmm. Also in Spain, and we don't hear much about what's been going on in other countries in Europe, but evidently in Ireland, back in 2014, it was kind of like a benchmark year last year in the sense that in the early part of the year, Ireland managed to exit from the Troika bailout without a continuation of financial support, and the economy went into recovery, and unemployment started to fall, and one would have expected a rise in support for the government of Fine Gael and Labour Party, but in fact, quite the opposite happened. The reason was an explosion from below on the issue of water charges, the final austerity straw that broke the camel's back, and that movement has been extremely spontaneous. Right to Water, also known as R2W, was an opposition privatization of the water system, and that campaign began as a mass non-payment against the austerity tax on people's homes to help finance this water privatization, and then it expanded from there. People actually started preventing this private company from installing water meters on people's homes and apartments, and then after that, I guess there was all sorts of demonstrations. In fact, back in October and November, over 150,000 people in the Republic of Ireland turned out in protests against water privatization. You got to remember that the Republic of Ireland is only 4.5 million people, so that's like 3% of the population hit the streets. But anyway, they've been having problems getting organized labor involved. I mean, up until now, you know, organized labor had just pretty much had a policy of doing nothing except hide behind the excuse that the Labour Party and government had protected working people from more worse cuts from the Conservative parties. But organizers finally from five unions got involved and started actually putting their money where their mouth was and actually started committing staff and money to help expand this and take on a broader anti-austerity theme, including higher taxes on corporate profits, income, and wealth tax, and also raising the minimum wage. So anyway, coming up next weekend, next Friday, actually, May Day, they're going to be having a huge rally all over Ireland, and they've invited representatives from the Greek Syriza Party as well as the Spanish Podemos Party. So it's definitely seems like this anti-austerity thing is basically spreading, you know, internationally. So let's, I'm hoping to see more of that.
Yeah, well,
no. Bill Gurrell just joined us.
Yeah, I was just adjusting the microphone. Everybody was waiting for me to weigh in. Right to Water.
R2W, yes.
R2W, that sounds familiar, but in a different context.
Yeah.
Right to Work. There'll be people discussing that this afternoon, probably.
Yeah. Indeed.
At the Champaign Public Library.
Indeed.
Between 1 and 3.
Oh, that's correct. 1 o'clock, Champaign Public Library, panel discussion about Right to Work, prevailing wage, workman's comp, and our very own Gus Wood's going to be one of the distinguished panelists on that. So definitely tune up to that, and I'll remind you about this later in the program. So what else do you have, Gus? What's been happening elsewhere?
Yeah, I'll be discussing this afternoon the history of Right to Work. So
okay.
People can get a better context of where it comes from, and also different measures that we can take from a local standpoint and also a national standpoint to fighting Right to Work, because it can be fought and we can win, despite what a lot of people believe.
Indeed.
But the main thing that's going on is the big story, even though it's been kind of swept under the rug a lot because of the stuff with the Hillary Clinton, the nomination, and all these other national things, that the testing scandal from Atlanta public school system, the case is officially over. More than 30 teachers, mind you, teachers, not board members or high-ranking administrators, more than 30 teachers who were told and coerced to do things have been charged in the Atlanta public school cheating scandal, and they have been found guilty, all of them. Very harsh sentences from the Superior Court Judge Jerry Baxter, who was very much adamant about his anger and frustration and disappointment in the all African American black teachers. The former Atlanta teachers principals, there's only one administrator, was charged with racketeering. Yeah. Which is, in other words, for those RICO charges, in other words, the things that they gave to Al Capone and other big-time mobsters. The prosecutors argued that they conspired to cheat, provided students with answers to standardized tests, allowing lower-performing students to copy from higher-performing students, and changing answers on tests, having these erasure parties that they would go into the school in the middle of the night and erase the wrong answers and put the right answers. The sentences for the eight are draconian, including 7 years in prison, plus 13 years of probation, along with 2,000 hours of community service and a $25,000 fine for each person. Two defendants chose to waive their right to appeal, admit their guilt, and apologize in exchange for lighter sentences. An 11th defendant just had a baby, so her sentence was postponed. So this brings the number of educators who were charged for the 2-year scandal, they call it, the scandal, and up to 30. And what's interesting is that I bring up the fact that Judge Baxter, again, who was just so utterly, who showed his utter disdain for the defendants, he yelled at them and refused to let them speak during the trial. With his extreme sentences and more harsh than ever prosecutors, the prosecutors had requested longer sentences than the ones that were given. Some of the prosecutors were actually asking for over 25 years.
Unbelievable.
What this reminds me of is all these, ridiculous stories about, grade school kids being arrested. What is, it's like we have the militarization of the police and the, policitization of the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Wow. Yeah, it's really ridiculous. And in a future show, we are actually going to get into the details of the Atlanta cheating scandal. Those that don't know, I was a teacher in Atlanta public school system while this happened and this exploded. And it hit the elementary schools and middle schools. I taught in high school. So we're actually going to get into the details of how it started, because there's a very nasty historical precedent in the state of Georgia to disrespect not only teachers, but just workers in general because of the governor and other state policies. I'm just being honest. So that's going to be a really interesting show, and it's going to be, I believe,
in 3 weeks. May 16th.
Please listen, because we're going to give out a lot of details and a lot of understanding, because this could happen to our state or your state. So you definitely want to be aware of what's going on in your public education system. So.
Yeah, and the thing to remember is these teachers did it under coercion due to the fear of losing their jobs, and most of the administrators got off with nothing, charges at all.
Exactly, and in this system, if you are not given tenure, or if you lose your job, you are considered blackballed throughout the state, whereas in you have a red mark in your name that you will not be hired as a teacher anymore.
I like red mark better.
Yeah, red mark. Yeah. I've heard from teachers like actually saying that like they can't be hired anywhere because of them not receiving another contract, and that stuff travels. So it's a really nasty system that we're going to have to break down.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. In other news, reality TV star and Olympic hero Bruce Jenner says, "I am woman."
Man.
That was
okay, Bill.
Gigantic everywhere, man. Every web page you look at, it's all up and down.
Yeah, that's real important news.
Yeah, like nothing else happened yesterday.
Yeah, indeed. Well, this is kind of interesting. Came out of Greece. It's actually to the people of Europe and the whole world. We signatories, this appeal stand by the Greek people. This is actually from a network all over Europe. Through their vote in the election of the 25th of January 2015, to become the first population in Europe and the Northern Hemisphere to have rejected the politics of austerity. Basically, they're setting up a Greek public debt troop commission at the initiative of the president of the Greek parliament. There are millions and millions of citizens who are rightly posing basic and fundamental questions about this debt. And it's basically what happened to the money that made up this loan to Greece. What were the conditions attached to it? How much interest had been paid? What rate? How much capital had been repaid? How was the debt allowed to accumulate without benefiting the people? Where did the capital go? What was it used for? How much was diverted? By whom? And how was this done? And I mean, this is important questions. Of course, the International Monetary Fund and the Central European banks, they think this is outrageous, but it's just part of the whole, they're talking about this, whether they're launching this is following an urgent appeal to all citizens of the world that reject this ever less democratic and less humane neoliberal capitalist world. So we'll see what happens with that. I mean, it's quite interesting that this fight back against neoliberalism is actually spreading all over, like I said in the previous story. So, here in the United States, our austerity is more sneaky. You know, what they're trying to do right now, of course, they're cutting food stamps like you reported last week, Gus, and they're also trying to privatize Social Security and Medicare. In fact, they've already started privatizing Medicare, and they're doing it through the back door, so to speak, by having these managed care corporations do the services instead of unionized state workers. And it's just, we're going to see what happens, but I'm telling you, the neoliberalism's greed is insatiable, and they will not stop until the population of all countries, including the United States, are pushed down to subsistence level survival, unless we fight back.
Dave, there's just 2 minutes ago, our upcoming guest, Cindy Sheehan, made a post on Facebook saying, "Bruce Jenner makes a prettier older woman than a handsome older man."
Bill, How is this labor related?
I mean, just the fact that I got like maybe 20 different texts from my world yeah. news sources on my phone from that, but I only got one text about the earthquake in Nepal.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you go to Labor Start, spelled LABOUR Start,
yeah.
you will see thousands of stories from all over the world about labor events, strikes, lockouts, and so on and so forth, that somehow can't, the rest of the media never has time to cover, you know.
Yeah, they don't want to cover.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Diane Sawyer doesn't have time to go cover striking Vietnamese shoemakers.
Or even strikes here in this country.
That's true, very true. I mean...
Okay, what else is in the news here, Gus? I got something interesting. If you're looking for something real quick, this is real fast. I guess, you know, we're hearing about this Trans-Pacific Partnership and how Obama is assuring the American public that he wouldn't do anything to harm the American people with his trade pack. And that it's going to help. But
I would never send a drone to shoot an American person.
Well, Senator Elizabeth Warren fired back, I guess, after that little statement by him on the Sunday morning talk shows last week, saying, okay, if that's the case, then make it public, because this Trans-Pacific Partnership deal is all, not even U.S. congressmen and senators can see it. You know, it's all, and they're supposed to vote on something that they don't even have access to.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, you know, if there's nothing in there that's bad that people won't like, then why are you hiding it?
Indeed.
Yeah, because that's what they'd say to you. Oh, no.
Yeah, well,
you don't need a Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, and they're trying to say, oh, we got all sorts of labor and environmental safety provisions. Well, here's a story to show that's...
Well, let's hear about them then. Well, yeah. Why don't you tell them to?
Remember when NAFTA was passed, they had supposedly all these labor and environmental protections, which to date, none of them have been enforced.
Oh, and do you remember when Barack Obama was running for president and he said he was going to fix all that?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, in 2011, there was the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement was initiated, and they suggested that there was going to be all sorts of basically, they called it a labor action plan to basically curb the past abuses of that's happened in Colombia. Well, in the last 4 years since that pact was signed, none of this has happened. In fact, there was over 105 trade unionists that have been murdered just in the last 4 years in Colombia, and also that there's been over 1,900 threats and acts of violence against trade unionists, as well as over 1,300 death threats that basically making threats of murders, and the documents added that countless instances of retaliation against workers who are organized in a union go unreported and addressed by Colombian authorities, including illegal firings, non-renewal of contracts, daily harassment, none of this has subsided and none of it's been enforced. So there we go again, more BS.
And that's the thing, and that's what goes to show you that this is not a democracy in this country. Where is the body that holds these people accountable for not doing what they say they were going to do?
Indeed.
We have to empower ourselves as citizens of this country to fight this status quo, this ridiculous, just non-responsibility, non-accountability on the parts of these politicians as they continue this garbage. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, but the thing is, the Fourth Estate, which is the body that you're talking about, the
media.
Body that is supposed to take care of this stuff,
keep people accountable,
is too busy interviewing Bruce Jenner.
Right.
Meanwhile, this week's top stories on Labor Start, Hong Kong. Unions in Hong Kong fighting for real universal suffrage. South Korea. Hundreds of thousands in Korea strike against government labor reforms. Bangladesh.
So-called reforms.
Yes. Rana Plaza, 2 years on. Progress. Well, reforms, but...
That means
bad
basically
reforms.
Their reforms basically are attacks on workers' standard of living.
Yeah. Rana Plaza, 2 years on in Bangladesh. Progress, but no hiding from massive task ahead. I don't even know what Rana Plaza was. Korea. South Korea again. Workers strike against flexible labor market pension reform.
Yeah, basically privatization of pensions.
USA, Trumpka, time to abolish undemocratic fast-track processes. And it goes on and on and on. That's right, right there. Why is Richard Trumpka not all over the place? The top labor leader in the United States. And this thing is happening, and he is not all over the media. He was in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
In the 90s, him and Gerald McAtee were all over the place. You couldn't turn on CNN without seeing those guys. And then they got caught up in the Teamster election scandal.
Yep.
They were giving the money to third parties, much like what's his name in Texas, the Republican?
Rick Perry?
No, not Rick Perry. He was a congressman.
I don't remember.
Well, anyway, he got off of it. But anyway, it's the same kind of thing. It's this third party thing. They were doing it on the advice of Democratic consultants, in order to sway the Teamsters election. And they must have made a deal with the Labor Department because they kind of disappeared, mm-hmm. you know, for a long time. And you cannot have a strong labor movement if you can't have a face and a voice out there in everybody else's face.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. You know? Like you said many times before, in the 1920s and 30s, if you mentioned the name John L. Lewis, you know, at least 7 out of 10 people knew who it was immediately. You know,
oh, yeah. Well, like my parents, they were in small town, farmer, even anti-Roosevelt, but they knew about John Lewis, man, because John Lewis was as big as Clark Gable,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he weighed in and he was there and he was a Republican.
Yeah.
John L. Lewis was a Republican, folks.
Yeah.
You know,
but he represented his members to, you know, at least a lot better degree than what most, of the national heads of organized labor are doing now, you know, and like you said, seen in
he created that membership.
Yes. And they're not seen and they're not heard. Therefore, they don't exist, you know.
That's right. You know, you can go on any construction job. I would say almost any union work site, period, University of Illinois, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
Ask 9 out of 10 people who Richard Trumka is, they wouldn't know.
But they know who Bruce Jenner is.
Yeah. And, you know, they probably wouldn't know who the president of their own union is because they get stuff from them.
Right.
You know?
To answer your question, but Rana Plaza, that was the collapse of that high-rise factory that killed 1,100 workers.
That was just about a year ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, 2 years okay. on. I'm sorry. That's what the headline.
Here we go.
This must be Ms. Sheehan.
Okay.
Oh, I better get my head.
Hello, WFT. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Cindy Sheehan. I was supposed to call.
Yes, Cindy. Thank you. This is David Johnson, the co-host of the World Labor Hour. I'm here with Bill Gorell, who originally contacted you, and our other co-host, Gus Wood. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Well, I know, you know, first of all, I just want to, you know, kind of give a little plug to your radio show, Cindy Soapbox. When can listeners tune into that?
Okay. Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, it's a podcast, and it's available online at the Soapbox People's Network. Or CindySheehanSoapbox.com.
Oh, by the way, Cindy, this is Bill Gorell, and... How are you doing today? It's great to hear you. And I do have a ulterior motive on this, is I haven't seen any soapboxes posted lately to download and listen to, even on radioforall.net, which is another place you can download them. And I just wanted to hear your voice.
Oh, well, I keep on putting the show out. Oh, I don't... I'll check in to see what's going on with that.
Oh, okay. I was just looking at your website today, and I didn't see any to download, and I hadn't seen them on Radio for All, so I was kind of wondering about that. But the major reason we wanted to talk to you is that you are really most well-known as a peace activist, but you are one of the peace activists who has made the connection between the wars that they're against and the militarization and the economies that support them.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, you have a blog on your, or you have an entry on your Soapbox blog where you're talking about going to Wisconsin and back in 2011, and you didn't see anybody with a sign that kind of reflected those feelings, and I can't really remember exactly what that was right now. I think it was right. the entry called, "It's the War Economy, Duh."
You know, that's a very good point. I think that's a great connection.
Well, I think that when the Occupy movement was at its height, I stayed here in California because I thought the Occupy movement was a local movement. So I went to Occupy Sacramento, but I really tried to locally and nationally connect the dots of those things. That young people were demanding the forgiveness of debt for their student loans, and they were, you know, demanding that the banks be, you know, not so involved in every aspect of their life. But but then they were, you know, not talking about the trillions of dollars spent every year on the war machine.
Indeed.
Yeah. Oh, I hear. Yeah. I would have read. Oh.
We can't have these social programs when we're actually spending, you know, that much money on war and empire.
Yeah. Well,
it seems it's very hard for people to make those connections.
Yeah, well, Martin Luther King made that connection, and look where it got him.
Well, back in 67, yeah, so nothing's really changed much since then.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
Because people want to compartmentalize their issues, and that really is not possible.
Yes, I believe, you know, it's amazing how much things are interconnected. I mean, you know, the wars of, corporate empire, around the world, and also the police militarization and police murders of citizens on the streets that's been escalating, in the last year or so at an exponential rate. And the whole thing about, trying to privatize Social Security, Medicare, cuts in food stamps in order to fund more funding, for this, war machine that basically is, you know, putting money in the pockets of these, war profiteers. And it's all these things are connected, don't you think?
Well, absolutely. And it's just, I'm so tired of hearing there's not enough money.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
They don't have the money. And they do have the money. It's not an issue of resources. It's an issue of prioritization. That's right. A big word to say without a cup of coffee yet.
Yes, it is early for you there, isn't it?
Prioritization of these resources and really to be a healthy, effective, nurturing, positive society, we need to reprioritize the resources. I mean, people give so much of their hard-earned money to go to taxes and fees and things like that without thinking of where is that money going and why is so much of the stuff that we need to subsist being taken away from us when the power elite have excess. And so people just is like so frustrating. We act like it's our fault because we're poor. It's not our fault, it's the system's fault because that's what it's designed to do. And so to just say, I don't want any of my, my money to go towards these violent, things. I don't want to go in, towards, you know, supporting the banks and supporting, the wealthy so they don't lose, a dime of their money. I want it to go stay here in my community to help people. I want it to stay here in my house to help myself.
Yeah, really.
Indeed. And so what have you been up to? I know you're, you know, you seem like you're always involved in at least one project, if not more. What have you been up to lately, Cindy?
Well, we just got through in March with Spring Rising. We had 5 days of actions in Washington, D.C. It was called Spring Rising, an anti-war intervention. And, you know, it's really sad that since Obama's been president, the anti-war movement has been very small. It's been very, it's been lacking energy. And Spring Rising, the attendance was not as great as it would have been if Bush was president or if, you know, McCain or that other dude had won. But, or Romney. But, it was very energetic and people there were connecting the dots. We really think that not enough emphasis has been put on the murders and the torture and the bombing and the destruction that the U.S. empire does abroad. But we also understand that, like you said, the police murders and the police state here at home are very important to people. Those are immediate issues that many people have to deal with on a daily basis. So we connected those, you know, and the police state at home and the empire abroad. And the people who came to Spring Rising were really understanding that.
Yes, and, you know, it's interesting that what's also connected is you mentioned, you know, just a moment ago about, you know, the, horrible, student debt that's going on. And it seems like, you know, a lot of, young working class, mostly men, but some women, feel like they have no other option but to go into the military, because they can't afford, you know, university tuition and that. And, do you see this as a connection, sort of as, an economic draft, if you will?
Definitely.
Right. I mean, there's people like my son, Casey, who got, the reason he joined the military was for his college benefits. He had already completed a 2-year college degree and, you know, felt like there just wasn't enough resources in the family, or he was working full time and going to school full time, you know, putting so much pressure and stress on our young people in the working class. So he joined the military because he was promised to have a college education. And that's kind of like, you know, a story of the working class. But then there's people in the inner cities, in the poor class, who the working poor or poor class, who go because they don't have any opportunity for anything. They can, you know, sell drugs or join the military. And it's, people say, oh, there's no draft. Your son didn't have to join. And, you know, that's true, but they don't look at it. They're looking at it through privilege. They're not looking at it through the lens of reality. And so it's just a situation where they got rid of the draft during Vietnam, the end of Vietnam. But they didn't do it because they're good guys. They did it because they knew how much it radicalized people.
Well, they also didn't want their kids getting drafted or have to do things to get deferments or something. You know, I was curious, Cindy, while you were talking there, I was just wondering, what did Casey want to do? Beyond
be an elementary school teacher.
Oh, wow.
That
would have been good.
He was very devoted to the church, and he wanted to eventually get married and become a deacon in the Catholic Church. And, you know, those were his modest plans, having a family and, you know, just trying to live a happy life.
And in order to achieve that in this country, you might have to go be a warrior.
Or become a debt peon.
Kill people. You know, that is just so devious. It's like, I believe, and I'm sure you guys believe too, that education from preschool to university is, and to beyond, is a human right, not a privilege.
It is correct.
So devious that they've made it so out of reach for us that our young people have very little choices. So go kill people, you know, kill other innocent people. Kill people, members of your own class, get into a warfare with somebody that didn't do anything to you or really to anybody. I got so upset when we were in Spring Rising because I just thought I heard an Iraqi man talking about being in Baghdad during Shakanah, and I just thought there's probably so many people around the world just looking at each other or whatever and just thinking, what the hell did I ever do to the United States of America to deserve this?
Really?
You know, what did I do? Did I just happen to be born somewhere that has a lot of natural resources that the elite capitalists want to steal, you know? And so, yeah, super devious. I just was laughing yesterday because I got a survey from the Democratic Party.
No, yes, I was just reading that this morning, Cindy. That was great. I love those.
Yes, it asked me as a leader of the party. Don't I even have to?
What, as a leader of the Peace and Justice Party? Or?
Yeah, I belong to the Peace and Freedom Party.
Or Peace and Freedom, I'm sorry.
Democrat. I haven't been for years. But anyway, one of the questions was, do you support President Obama's plan to make community college tuition free for people who want to work for it? And I was like, hell no. I think that I support a plan that makes all education from preschool to university and beyond free. Most countries in the world have free or very low-cost university. And here in the so-called richest country in the world, our young people have to go into lifelong debt or join the military if they're not part of the 1%.
Oh, by the way, Cindy, did you go to college in California before Reagan got that changed?
I did, but unfortunately, I only went to one semester.
Okay, I was just wondering, you know. But...
And then, see, this was another thing. Back then, when I graduated from high school in 1975, I went to one semester of college, but then I got an awesome job. I got a job that, you know, made, I worked for Security Pacific National Bank. I had, my wages were, you know, and they were okay. They were better than minimum wage, but I had, complete health. I had 12 sick days a year. I had, the first year I had one, week of vacation, paid vacation. I had retirement. And, you know, this is what has been taken.
Right. I mean, you can't get that with a bachelor's degree very often now.
And you can't. My daughter has a master's degree, which she has gone into lifelong debt to get. And she is a bartender.
Well, so, I've got a master's degree, and I'm a laborer on construction jobs. Fortunately, I went when I didn't have to rack up all that debt.
So, but back in the, when, you know, Cindy, you graduated high school the same year I did in 75. At that time in California, college, was it free to everybody or most people?
It was, it was free to people who were residents of the state. And
Oh, I didn't know that.
It never was like that here.
Yeah, you had to pay a little bit of fees. It wasn't, I think my first.
Like activity fees?
It was like $4.
$4 in fees? Free tuition? Wow. I mean, we laugh about it now because it seems like an alternative universe.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was a reality. This is a reality in most countries, most industrialized countries of the world, even some third, lesser developed countries. But more importantly, this was a reality in the state of California, you know, a generation ago.
Yeah, and look who changed it, and look what happened. I tell you, I believe that the election of Ronald Reagan as president, perhaps there were historical forces that were so great that it wouldn't have mattered, you know. But that it was, that, for us anyway, no matter who was president, that was such a turning point, turning completely away from any thinking about the planet and our future at all and just going right back to the old, we can have whatever we want and make as much money as possible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, well, okay, so, Cindy, now, you just got back from Washington, D.C., you said, and I know you, are you going to be running again on the Peace and Freedom Party for any position?
Well, I I don't think so.
Okay. Okay.
I ran for governor in 14, and I ran, I guess that seems a lot longer ago than that, but then I ran for vice president in 2012, and I just really think... You know, that and I have a book called I Left My Marbles in San Francisco, The Example of Federal Electoral Politics.
Uh-huh.
And I just think that they're the obstacles that they put in front of independent or third parties are, you know, especially federally.
Mm-hmm.
I think locally it's different.
Yes.
You know, most local offices are nonpartisan. And, you know, I think that if we want to really build a strong, third-party, independent workers situation, that we need to really concentrate locally and forget about federal offices, because it's just almost impossible, really. And so I think that my time can be better. In California, we have something called POP2 primary, and it's just in the primary. It's an open primary, so you can vote for anybody. You don't have to vote for a member of your own party.
Mm-hmm.
But only the top two vote-getters move on to the general election, and it's all about money. And
yep.
It's always a Democrat and Republican, or two Democrats to two Republicans.
Yeah, that's
so
odd.
It made it even harder.
Two people from the same party could end up running for governor, right?
And it hasn't happened for governor, but it's happened in some other offices.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in strong Democrat districts or strong Republican districts, it's happened where they've been from the same party.
Well, and this is really...
It really is designed to kill third party or independent politics. And really, the writers of this initiative that passed the, you know, the people of the state of California said it's to... It's designed to get radicalism out of politics.
As if that's been such a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Cindy, I know, of course, about Richmond, California. You know, we've been hearing over time some good things coming out of there about how there can be some very good change at the local level there. And even recently how I think it was Chevron Oil Corporation right. spent an untold amount of money and found, right. you know, opportunist lackeys to run against some of the incumbents. And they lost. I mean, despite spending millions, I think tens of millions of dollars. And I think that's a real inspiration for a lot of us. I have to say, I think you're right at this point in time. I do also know, though, that everybody I talk to every day and see, things that are posted, various sites on the internet is people are fed up with everything. They just don't, there doesn't seem to be any, national group out there, sort of channeling this, anger, and frustration with people. But people are definitely not happy. I mean, I'd say 90% of the people I talk to, are not happy with the way things are going in this country.
Right. And you're right. Richmond, California is a perfect example of how things can get done locally. And I'd really encourage those listeners to check more into that. And, I rode my bike across the United States in 2013 from California to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I think you're within 100 miles of us.
Really? Where are you?
We're in Champaign, Illinois.
Oh, yeah. We really, we went down Route 66 to, Chicago.
Okay.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
I know. It was amazing. We went on Route 66 from Santa Monica to Chicago, and then we took various ways down from Chicago to Washington, D.C. But anyway, going across the country like that very slowly is was an amazing way to gauge the country, because as an activist in my life, I usually just fly from the West Coast to the East Coast. Once in a while, I'll make a stop in Chicago or, somewhere in Minnesota or Wisconsin. But usually it's from the West Coast to the East Coast. And we call you guys the flyover state.
Yeah. Who wants to stop here?
I know. I really love Chicago. It's really amazing. But going slowly, we had a van that had a bunch of the whole van, the support van, was covered with stickers or magnets with various political statements on them. And we would be parked just taking a break, and people would come to us. And it was amazing. One of the biggest complaints we had of people who came to us was about this so-called Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Managers of restaurants were saying, I have to cut back hours of my staff. I've been ordered to cut back hours and cut back staff, because if we do that and get under a certain payroll, we don't have to pay their health care. Mm-hmm. So this distresses managers. They don't feel like they're in the business to make things worse and rougher for their employees. But we had stopped along the way, and of course people who knew we were going to be there came, and we got the same thing. People are absolutely frightened by the direction that this country and the world is going in. And they just really they felt the same way. They had no way to channel. We have no way to express us. We don't know what to do. It's at a point where I think there's some kind of national panic going
mm-hmm.
on with no way to channel it.
Oh, Cindy, I'm from a real small town. And the route that you took, I know that through Illinois you went through some really small towns.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a chance to stop and talk to any people in those particular towns, which tend to be pretty conservative towns?
We did, and we had some really good response. This trip that we took by bicycle, it was, I've actually, I had a trip by car where I got my tires slashed.
Wow.
But this one time. But this trip, it really, people were very open and welcoming to us. And so it was, we didn't even come across Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, wherever we went, wherever we stopped, we didn't come across any opposition, which was one of the most surprising things about Tour de Peace. I thought maybe we'd get people to go by us and throw rotten tomatoes or something, but we had a really positive, welcoming response everywhere we went.
Yes, I find that, somebody's gotta be pretty diehard anymore to be upset about somebody being against these wars.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Cindy, thank you so much for calling in. And
do you really think that Bruce Jenner makes a prettier older woman than a handsome older man? Oh, and by the way, Jonna Mitchell says she wants to hear more about the royal pregnancy.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You hear the irony, of course. We were just talking about that earlier about hundreds of strikes going on worldwide, including the United States, and other things that affect, you know, working people's lives. And but this is, you know, you don't hear any of that in the corporate media. All you hear is Bruce Jenner and Kim Kardashian
and his relatives.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I think working class solidarity. We really need. That's one thing we need to do to foment here in the United States and to reach out internationally. That's where the struggle is.
Indeed. So I wanted to ask you just as a last question here, what do you recommend people do that are fed up with everything? I mean, I know it's kind of a broad question, but kind of the best synopsis you could probably give here in a few minutes.
Well, I think that people need to organize in their communities, organize to collapse this empire in any way you can. To just like build strong communities and of compassion, build strong communities of care. Look at models like Richmond, California, and just work really hard. I think if every community did that, then it would spread across the country. I think a strong, healthy United States makes a strong, healthy world. And so, but we can't do everything, and we can't heal the wounds of this empire. So I think it's best just to look locally and go to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox and the Soapbox People's Network. And we have so many bloggers. We have a lot of podcasts, a lot of information there. And I can be reached at CindySheehanSoapbox@gmail.com. And I also want to plug my new book. It's called The Obama Files, Chronicles of an Award-Winning War Criminal. And so,
oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, that'll catch people's attention. Cindy, it's been a real honor. Thank you so much for calling in the World Labor Hour.
I want to say that everybody in this studio, and I'm sure that most of our listeners, really look up to you and thank you for your work. Thank you for your service.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Have a good day.
You too. Take care. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Until the philosophy which hold one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war that until they're no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes. Miss a war that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race. This a war that until that day the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality, illusion to be pursued, but never attained. Now everywhere is war, war, and until the ignoble and unhappy regime that hold our brothers in Angola, in Mozambique, South Africa, subhuman bondage, have been toppled, totally destroyed. Well,
okay, that was Bob Marley, Everywhere There's War. Anyway, we got some public service announcements here. The AFL-CIO Champaign County, in conjunction with East Central Illinois Building Trades Construction Trades Council, will hold a memorial service in observance of AFL-CIO Workers' Memorial Day to remember and recognize all workers from Champaign County who have died while at their workplace. This national event is held annually on April 28th, and the event locally will be at 3 p.m. on April 28th at the Workers' Memorial Site on Parkland Way, the east entrance to Parkland College off of Madison Avenue. And anyway, for more information, you can contact Brad Deal at AFL-CIO Community Service Liaison on the United Way at 841-2822. And also to let you know that Labor's World View TV is every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. And for the month coming up here, for the last week of April and the month of May, we're going to be playing some oldies but goodies here, starting on Sunday, April 26th, which is this Sunday. It will be the Great Uprising of 1877, one of those events that is not discussed in your history class. The following Sunday, May 3rd, it's going to be about Harry Bridges and the International Longshoremen's Union on their general strike in San Francisco in 1934. And then following that, for May 10th and May 17th, is going to be a two-part series on the Decatur, Illinois Staley lockout with Mike Griffin. As it'd be an interview as well as some archived film footage that was taken during the struggle. And, man, Bill, I could not believe how much film footage Labor Beat had on the Staley struggle.
You know, actually, Dave, I did something for them. I had a machine that could take the big 3/4-inch tapes they had, mm-hmm. and then transfer them to VHS. And I spent months out of my house transferring their entire library. And yes. Man, they did a lot of work down there in St. Louis those years.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, Staley, Decatur Staley Illinois lockout back in the early 90s is a classic story of not just a fight against a multinational, foreign multinational corporation who bought out a locally owned corporation in Decatur, but also about which it seemed like turned into a fight against their own international union to try to sell out the workers that were almost had that strike won.
Well, not just that, Dave. It also, I think, really energized and brought together a lot of people. A lot of the people that I know in this town right now who are activists, I met in Decatur.
And the Staley struggle, yes, in
right.
the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. And
that's what launched the World Labor
that
Hour.
That is correct.
Yes.
It inspired the World Labor Hour. And by the way, Paul Muth says that Citizen 4 is back at the Art Theater with select times, 2:30 today, then 7:30 Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday. After that is something called Overcriminalized at 7:30 on Tuesday. And it's by the ACLU.
Okay. Okay, so to finish my schedule here real quick, after the Staley lockout two-part series, Sunday, May 24th is the Walter Reuther and the United Auto Workers, all the sit-down strikes in the 30s occupying the factories, which is a tactic I think we need to bring back here in this country because strikes are sometimes ineffective where a factory occupation or workplace occupation seems like it always gets the goods. And last but not least, on Sunday, May 31st, the GEO strike back several years ago, mm-hmm. the one-day strike that where the GEO got everything they wanted in one day with former GEO member Rich Potter. So tune into that. And today, last but not least, today at the Champaign Public Library at 1 p.m. Is Bad for Workers, Bad for Illinois, Rauner's Wrong, Governor Rauner's Wrong, and What We Can Do About It. So join us for a presentation as well as question and answers. It's the Champaign Public Library, 1 p.m., and some of the presenters on the panel will be Dan Gilbert, Labor Education Program, University of Illinois, speaking on job the limits of job creation through right to work zones, and also our very own Gus Wood, graduate employee organization, president of the graduate employee organization and co-host of the World Labor Hour, WFT Radio, speaking on PASS to overcome the attacks on the poor and working families embedded in the Rauner agenda. In other words, fight back strategies. So I always love those. And other panelists, we have Susan, Hurley, who's the director of the Chicago Jobs with Justice, who's going to be coming down. She decided to come at the last minute, and there'll probably be some other people showing up. They'll be talking about other things like workman's compensation, prevailing wage, etc. So definitely an event worth turning out for here within 55 minutes.
Well, it would be about basically any issue or topic that has to do with labor on a state level, which is workers' compensation, unemployment, so forth. By the way, that was Paul Muth on the phone, and that was actually an announcement he sent in February. It just popped up on my screen.
With something else.
I'm so sorry,
a little dated. Okay.
And by the way, folks, where else in this community would you be hearing these things? Like these announcements, Cindy Sheehan on the radio. Mm-hmm. You know, where else would you be hearing these things? Would you hear them on Stevie J's station? No. Would you hear him on his old station? No. Would you hear WDWS anywhere? Would you hear it on the crappy third-rate talk radio station, FM station in Decatur? No. You won't hear this on your classic rock station either, or your oldie station. That's because we are here to present those things that we think are important for you, and you're listening now, so you think they're important for you, and so you should, by some kind of logic, then think that it's important for you to send money to us so that we can keep doing these things. And yep, you can enjoy them. And maybe you could even come in and do them with us. If you send us $40 at least, you could become a member, take the Airshifter training, and do this.
And have your own show if you like on radio. Yes.
And do this. I don't know. Is that the new cap there? For $90.10, you can get a cap. You can get a shirt. You can get a tote bag. The cap that's sitting here, I might have to make another $90 pledge if that's it, because it's pretty cool. It's black and it's gold.
Okay.
Yeah. Man, I mean, it's bad.
Okay.
Looking.
All right.
So you want it.
Yes, and just let some of the listeners know that we've gotten a lot of support off of air. I mean, there's been all sorts of checks and credit card purchases. And there's been people that are pledging not just from the Champaign-Urbana community, but there's been people who have sent in donations to support the World Labor Hour from small towns in Champaign County and even, you know, Macon County and Ford County. And we also have people that have called in and pledged to support the Labor Hour from Chicago, Oakland, California, New York City, and other places around the country. So, you know, we do have a broad listener base out there.
That's another thing, folks. Inform your friends who live away from here that they can stream this at weft.org, mm-hmm. and if they like it, they can make a donation at weft.org.
Yes. And also, this Saturday, just earlier today, during Higher Ground, we had a lot of calls calling. Aaron and Carol had quite a response from their listeners today. And about, I'd say, half the callers that call in did a split pledge between Higher Ground and the World Labor Hour. So we really appreciate it. And like I've told Carol and Aaron, that they've got the best program on WFT after the Labor, well, in addition to the Labor Hour, you know. I gotta have a little bit of, you know, how should I put it. I don't want to concede too much, but no, they have a great program from 8 to 10 p.m. I mean, you get a lot of community feedback from their program. They talk about, you know, issues that are very, very important here in the community, and it's a great program. And, you know, this gives you another reason to call in with your pledge, because really, you know, it's not so much about, you know, the station needs to know what programs people like, but the important thing is that we're all trying to keep the station on the air.
Yeah, and then besides that, you know, that's just two of our public affairs programs, two of our local public affairs programs.
Yes.
Which you aren't going to find on other radio stations. Anything mm-hmm. like these. Yeah, you'll have, your local talk thing, and people are selling, I don't know what they're doing on those shows, because I don't listen to them, but they're not talking about this.
Indeed, and the thing is too that also besides our very good public affairs programs, there's all sorts of music programs on various genres that you do not hear on either corporate radio or even on what's that you know the satellite radio
Sirius.
Yes.
Oh, for example, Sruti, Music of India. Okay, I don't know. I don't think Sirius has a Music of India channel.
Uh-huh.
You know. Not in this country anyway.
Yeah.
And the blues, man, the blues and the jazz. People in this town, you love the blues and you love the jazz. You know, support the blues and the jazz that you love.
You can get those on Sirius, but here's the unique thing about WFT. How many times have I tuned in when I was working on the job site? You know, when I was turned in during the afternoons, the blues program. How many times, I don't know, I can't count of how many times we've heard actually blues bands from Mississippi or other parts of the country that were coming through Champaign that stopped here and did a live performance during that blues hour.
Yeah.
I mean, that is pretty unique.
Sirius doesn't do requests. And you can't walk in to the Sirius station and maybe just see what's going on or
say hello or whatever. Yeah.
And you can't walk in with like a big check to give us a stay on the air at those other stations. But you can walk in here with a big check to give us.
Or a small one. We, you know, any little bit helps just to try to keep us on
the
air.
They're all physically the same size, but you know.
Yes, indeed. Okay, you've been listening to World Labor on WFT Community Radio in Champaign, Illinois, and we want you to stay tuned for the Union Edge. And until next week, be safe and power to the people. Take care.